Behold, a podcast for the ages. Recorded live from the interdimensional terror vortex of their subterranean dwellings comes the Rough House Podcast version 3.0. Two galactic warriors put down their warhammers and battle axes to perform a more noble task. Complaining about professional wrestling on internet-purchased microphones.
Now with more Simpsons references and Kota Ibushi thirst.
This is the Rough House Podcast with Marty and Christoph.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Rough House Podcast, episode number 364, for recording date Sunday, April 7, 2024. Hi, I'm Marty.
Hi, I'm Christoph, and man, I'm just gonna give forewarning here. It's gonna be a bitch sesh here, at least on my side of things.
It's gonna be a rougher rough house than usual.
Look, if you are one of the three people who listen to the show regularly, you know my thoughts on WWE product and everything. Culture and everything. So
yes,
clearly I'm biased. I'm not gonna sit here and try and make unbiased opinions because I am biased, and that lead, you know, it definitely influences how I feel about shows. I just wanted to warn people that there's gonna be a lot of negativity coming from me today whenever you listen.
But to be fair, Chris, that's why those who listen, like, we are not a pro wrestling news podcast. You know, we are not Dave Meltzer, Brian Alvarez, Sean Ross Sapp. We are not here to report the news. We are here to dissect it. We are here to give opinions on shows, on matches, on that sort of thing. And hopefully along the way, be funny. So
that's a big ask.
Because sometimes there's not a lot to work with. If you are here for the latest and greatest in news, sorry, there's a bunch of better sources for that. But this is,
and some bad ones too.
Yeah, very true. But this is our take. This is our view. So yes, you should have a bias. You absolutely should have a bias.
I really have a bias.
No disagreement. But before, so we will be. Let's do a little bit of a programming talk here, folks.
Okay.
So we will be covering WrestleMania Night One on the main show. We have a feeling that's going to fill up the entirety of said main show because there's a lot to get into.
Many thoughts.
We'll do our normal AEW recaps and maybe some other grab bag stuff. That's going to be on the Patreon this week, patreon.com/roughhousepodcast. Thank you for your support. And unfortunately, scheduling wise, we're a little screwed. So you may not hear, there will likely not be an episode next week.
Yeah.
You may not hear our take on WrestleMania Night 2 until we get back. So that would be the weekend of the 21st. Might have to be high to get through that one. And
which is Dynasty weekend too. So
yeah, exactly. We'll have Dynasty to preview, and we'll have a lot more to cover, including what broke just after Mania last night. Here we
go again. I did not want to wake up to this morning.
No, it's not great. It's not great. Announced during Collision let's take a step back. This was WrestleMania week. This was the week that WWE was doing a full court press of, you know, appearances on talk shows, on radio shows, on podcasts, on news programs. There were countless shows. There was a fucking clusterfuck match last night for Joey Janela's Spring Break that featured 80 people. Like, it is a jam-packed week of stuff in the world of pro wrestling.
Yeah.
And the number one thing people ended up talking about this week, both fans and talent alike on these shows, was AEW.
They just couldn't help themselves.
They couldn't. The bottle was uncorked on Monday as CM Punk appeared on the MMA Hour, Ariel Helwani's podcast, which, by the way, runs a lot more than an hour, but that's neither here nor there, because the Punk interview alone was an hour and 50 minutes.
Jesus.
And bless you if you have the wherewithal to sit through that. But they ultimately were dissecting and sort of relitigating the whole CM Punk AEW run. He could not speak much clearly on the All Out Brawl Out incident.
Mm-hmm.
But he did talk about his issues with Hangman Page. He talked about his issues with Colt Cabana. And most crucially, he started to dig into the details of his confrontation with Jungle Boy Jack Perry backstage at Wembley in August for All In.
Yeah.
So his take is obviously his take. It's going to be the natural bias that he has to what he does. I think the great turn of phrase that he had was, I didn't punch anybody. I just choked him a little bit, which that doesn't necessarily like absolve you.
No, I mean, if you're in a brawl, you know, a choke is a good way to, you know, kind of diffuse, I guess.
Sure.
I can't believe I'm coming to Punk's defense right here. But it all depends, again, on who truly started the provoking. And I think we know the answer to that, and we'll definitely find out.
Well,
but fuck. This guy, and I understand the comparisons of Punk bitching for an hour and 50 minutes and me bitching for an hour and 10 on this, or however long it's going to be. I understand the irony in me talking about that guy bitching about everything for, you know, 2 hours, but you know, I'm just a schmuck in my basement. He's a professional and a professional worker. And that's something everybody has to keep in mind when they listen
yes.
to everything that this guy fucking says.
Yes. There was a whole bit in there where he was like, oh, you know, I really hate, you know, the news outlets and how everyone thinks they're an insider now and they get their right. information. And then within like 30 seconds talking about the pipe bomb and about like how he's willing to go there, the places other people won't. And it's like, my dude, the only reason why you have those places to go there is because people know.
Yeah.
And the only reason why people know is because of the same journalists is, I admit, a strong word, but the same.
There are a few.
Let's call them observers. The same observers of professional wrestling.
Brandon Thurston's a journalist.
You know what? Yes. Brandon Thurston is absolutely a journalist. He uses Excel. That's how you know he's actually a journalist. He is. Say, he's damning these reporters while having built a name on being that guy that's like, oh, he's a little shooty. He's doing a wink and a nod to what's going on in real life. And he criticized Tony Khan
a lot,
although his criticisms weren't that surprising. Saying that, you know, he was a poor boss.
I mean, not really.
Saying that he was not good at resolving conflict. Which we've talked about enough on this show, and mm-hmm. we're again two schmucks. So of course, if we think it, undoubtedly they think it.
Yeah.
And this resulted in the next day, you had Cody Rhodes on Ariel Helwani's podcast defending AEW, defending Tony Khan, defending what he helped build.
Yeah.
You had Josh Barnett on that same podcast, and Ariel Helwani was fucking digging for some juice out of him.
He wasn't getting it either.
And Josh had probably the most even-handed response of anyone this week.
Yeah.
Of just like, well, you know, they're getting their legs underneath them. They were pretty good for where they are a few years in. But like, you know, some things are working, some things aren't. They're figuring it out. And, you know, everyone was really great to me. I had a great match with Claudio, and I'd love to work with them whenever they want to work with me.
Yeah. And, you know, I listened to Barnett's little bit there, and yeah, it, just as you described it, and it wasn't really anything. And I think Ariel Helwani got a little pissed about it, that he couldn't find anything to repost to go viral. But to circle back to Cody, and again, we're going to talk a lot about Cody later, but
yeah,
to give him his credit, Cody really did a great job of, you know, praising the people who were there at the beginning of AEW,
yes.
you know, saying he wouldn't be in the position that he's in right now without that happening.
Yes.
And maybe not so many words, but that was kind of the implication that I got from it.
Right.
And, you know, name dropping Kenny and the Bucks and talking about Tony, and the guy for as terrible as that neck tat is, like, I feel like that's the one thing that could prevent him from being like, you know, taking over for Paul when he, you know, decides to hang it up. Like, Cody is kind of perfect for that.
Well, it's really funny you say that, because I don't remember what outlet it was, but again, all the press this week, Cody did bring up again that Paul Levesque, that Triple H, is his favorite wrestler of all time.
Has he ever said that before?
He said that in the past. Yes. That he loves Triple H.
Okay.
Which is amazing given what he did when he started AEW.
Yeah.
But okay. He said, should the opportunity ever be there, he would love to follow in his footsteps.
Sure. Oh, yeah. No, I mean, he's laying the groundwork. I mean,
100%.
You know, he's very good at talking to the press. Again, it's a stupid fucking net tattoo.
Yeah.
That is just such a shame.
So this was Monday, Tuesday. Wednesday, Dynamite kicks off with Adam Copeland coming out and doing this rah-rah. There's been a lot of terrible things said lately. Pro wrestling's great no matter what you watch or where you watch it and all that. And all I could think was, if you are not tuned in,
yeah,
if you are not hyper-focused on professional wrestling the way the mentally ill like us are.
Yes, guilty.
You have no fucking idea what he's talking about.
And not only that, why is he the guy to make this speech? He's only been there for 6 months.
Right.
You know, he wasn't there at All In. He wasn't there at All Out.
Yeah.
You know, obviously, he has the experience of having been in both locker rooms for both companies. Obviously, with WWE for a very long time. But, you know, I don't know. It just felt like he didn't earn the merits of doing that aside. I don't feel like he earned that spot to be the cheerleader for AEW at this point. I mean, I think Mox was on his way to Japan.
Yeah.
Danielson was there, right?
Danielson was there. He worked a match.
And again, Danielson spent the majority of his career in WWE, but he's also been in AEW much longer and was there for those situations and has like a direct line to Tony Khan.
And so he's one of the guys who made the call. He's one of the guys who made the call to fire Punk.
So I feel like it would have been, and I made that maybe, I don't know if that's the character of Bryan Danielson right now, if that's why they didn't do it, or if Bryan didn't want to do it, or I don't know. It just seemed odd that Copeland was doing it.
So my guess as to why it was Copeland, and this is, just kind of spitballing, is he was seen as a WWE lifer. Sure. And he came over, and if his words are to be believed, and I have no reason to not believe them, he is having the most fun he's ever had in wrestling.
It seems like he's having a blast.
And I wouldn't be shocked if there was an element of him going, I want to go out there and defend you guys. At the same time, you could have just not addressed it. You could have just not talked about it.
That's the way to go.
Especially in a week where AEW had a little bit of grief thrown in their direction because they made their first releases.
Yeah.
10 people cut, you can read about all of them online. I'm not going to dissect all of that there, but this was from a company that had said, hey, if you have a 3-year deal, we'll run you through your 3-year deal and we'll let you go at the end if we didn't want to proceed.
Yeah.
The fact that actual cuts were being made, it was a different tact from AEW. It was a different tact than what we've been used to from Tony Khan. I understand this is how like professional sports work. People get cut all the time. Yeah. I mean, no differently. I will give Punk credit here on this one thing he said. Guys fight in the locker room all the time in professional sports. It's a non-issue. It's something that doesn't come up. It's something that just gets looked over and everybody shrugs it off and they become professional. He says that while, by the way, motherfucking everyone on in that podcast. But
yeah,
he has a point there that this could have been a non-issue.
Well, it could have been a non-issue had they not been looking for an out for the guy. Right. And he kind of made his own bed with that.
Right. Well, the thing that's funny is he even said he wanted to leave. He wanted to leave after All Out.
Right.
And Tony was like, no, we're going to have a separate show and you're going to do your own thing.
Right.
I digress. Last night, Collision started at 11:30. Ish.
Yes. Close
shout out. NCAA basketball. they announced that this Wednesday on Dynamite, the Young Bucks will be presenting footage from All In.
It's a terrible idea.
Subsequently, Brian Alvarez, Dave Meltzer, Sean Ross Sapp, basically your holy trinity of guys who know shit, have said that it will be the Punk Jungle Boy footage. The same footage that the lawyers, that Brian Danielson, that all these folks saw and made the call to fire Punk.
I understand that this is probably some kind of defense mechanism for AEW to say, no, he was in the wrong. He was a dick and don't listen to anything he said on Monday. But I also feel it's too reactionary. Like 100%. If you were going to release this footage, you should have done it immediately. As soon as the papers were signed and it was cleared by lawyers and everything.
Yeah.
Doing it now is a bad look.
Yeah, it looks vindictive. Now, before I say anything more, I want to acknowledge this. Yes, Meltzer, Alvarez, Sean Rassap have said what they've said because their sources have told them as such.
That's true.
If this is really just the Bucks doing a bit and trying to pop a rating for Wednesday, okay, we got worked. Congratulations. You're going to piss off a lot of people if you do that.
Sure.
At the same time, airing this footage, it helps no one who's there. Jungle Boy is in Japan right now, though the Bucks have been shouting him out lately and vice versa. So
don't love that.
This doesn't help him unless he's going to be randomly on the show on Wednesday because he's in Chicago next weekend, which should be interesting for New Japan.
He's going to show up to Phil's apartment.
Yeah, I know, right?
CM Punk, I want to fight.
This doesn't change anything for Punk one way or another. WWE is clearly behind him.
Yeah.
Paul Levesque is clearly behind him. So there's nothing there. And then otherwise it like you said, it's petty. It's reactive. And like the WWE stands are not going to be, even if it shows Punk absolutely pummeling Jungle Boy and, you know, dropping the F slur and, you know, as terrible as you want to make it.
Yeah.
That group of fandom is not going to go, oh, I've seen the light. I'm going to hop on over to AEW.
Yeah, no, nothing's going to change their minds. They've taken the blue pill and they are, you know, blissfully ignorant and stupid. So let them do their thing.
Yeah,
that's
just
fine.
Take a look at the current political spectrum and how people respond to facts. That's the way I'm going to put it. There is a correlation here.
There's a more direct than you think correlation.
This is bad. This is not a good idea. I get it. Tony's probably pissed off from what was being said on Observer Radio this morning. When Punk said what Punk said, once Tony heard, his head hit the fucking ceiling. This is how you get in a lawsuit again, by the way. Well,
this is how you, so there are inside Tony Khan, there are two wolves. There is the president, CEO, and the shit poster. Yes. And he's taken the wrong wolf to take the lead here. This is a shit poster message board sort of response to that happening. Like, no, fuck you. I have the receipts. What's this going to accomplish? So that's, you know, and it's a flaw of Tony. I'm not without flaws. You're not without flaws. We all have our flaws.
Yeah.
This is not it, my guy.
Yeah. This, even if it pops a rating, it's a magic trick you can only do once.
Yeah.
And those people will watch for that segment and they will turn it off.
Mm-hmm.
So it helps no one beyond, okay, you're now right in the court of opinion. I'm just going to point out this wonderful observation I saw online.
You don't make any money off the court of opinion, bro.
Right. But when you think of the court of public opinion, let's just point out, why is it every single time someone interacts with CM Punk, it breaks bad constantly? There's only one common denominator in this, and I don't think it's that Hangman Adam Page, Colt Cabana, Triple H, you know, all of the Bucks, Kenny, all of these different people. Oh, Kevin Owens were the asshole here.
I refuse to believe that Kevin Owens is an asshole in any respect. So that just totally nullifies that. Just a quick sidebar on Punk. You'd mentioned WWE so all in on him, and he seems to be kind of all in on what he's doing here. One of the funniest tweets I saw. Thank you. One of the funniest tweets I saw last night was a photo of Phil and The Miz smiling and yucking it up at WrestleMania with a copy of the tweet that Punk sent to Miz to go suck a blood money covered dick in Saudi Arabia. And I just popped real big for that.
Yes, that is where we are now. And that is the weird environment we went into last night. As from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, in a big ass arena, it was WrestleMania 40.
Sure looked like a big ass arena, didn't it?
Well, big ass stadium, I guess I should say.
Well, the way they lit it for half the night, it looked like a stadium. Or it did not look like a stadium, it looked like an arena. It was really weird, the presentation last night. Ads aside, we'll get to the ads.
Yeah.
But this is WrestleMania. You're at an NFL stadium in a major market, right off the highway, as they said. It was fucking 50 degrees cold. We get it. Wear a fucking jacket. But the way they lit a lot of these matches, they turned the lights down on the crowd. Yeah. And I don't understand why you would do that at WrestleMania, because the whole gimmick of WrestleMania is you're putting tens of thousands of people in a stadium.
Yeah, by the end of the show, they kind of got their shit together and were showing like the wide shots of the packed stadium. And
not as many as they used to, though. I feel like
no disagreement, because also remember, we got different people behind the board right now. Like, if there's any positive I can say from the jump about WrestleMania, minus some of those issues, like during the ladder match, it was really dark when guys got up to the top rope. Mm-hmm. The top rung. Because
which helped.
I don't know if they had like a bad lighting rig situation, but it just made everything look shadowy. It wasn't great. But on the positive, the booth, while yes, it's three guys yelling, felt loose, felt legitimate, felt real.
They all looked like complete assholes, but
I mean, look at who they are as people. but the camera cuts, the presentation visually was not as frustrating as it had been the past decade plus.
Yeah, there were definitely improvements in that. And this is coming from somebody who doesn't watch WWE hardly at all, aside from a couple big shows. Actually, it's pretty much just Mania at this point. and a random clip that I see.
I was saying, you watched Rumble, I thought.
On Twitter. I did watch Rumble, but I was more concerned with drinking and winning the pool than anything else that night. Right. Plus, there were wings there. So, I mean, that took precedence. A couple events a year. It's somehow to me, it looked like expensive and cheap at the same time. And I can't really put a finger on, like, you know, obviously it's WrestleMania, the big stage, the big production. Some of the special introductions worked. But with the lighting, it made it look like a not full stadium. It looked like a trip that AEW would use to show that half the arena isn't full. See, I can talk shit about AEW too. Fuck off. Yeah. I don't know. Now I'm getting defensive.
It's too early. You are already.
I don't know. It just
10 after 10 and Chris is ready to fight the internet. Let's go.
It seemed like it seemed inconsistent in terms of the production value to me last night.
Sure. I can absolutely agree with that, because one of the most common threads of the show was the intense amount of visual advertising.
Ugh.
And it made it feel like the fucking penny saver, man. Like,
I tweeted about it last night. I tried to find a good video of it or a photo of it, but it's like the beginning of Major League 2 when Roger Dorn is taking over the team and has all these fucking ads in the spring training stadium. And it looked low rent as fuck. And that's the other part of what I was talking about earlier, the disparity of production value. Like, not only that, there were some choices made on which sponsors were attached to which matches. I I don't know who thought of this or didn't think of this,
yeah,
but having Wingstop be the sponsor of the Jade Cargill, Bianca Belair, and Naomi match.
Yeah.
Certainly a choice.
Not great. Not great. Oh, also Agua Fresca for the Luchador match.
Yeah. Like, yeah.
For as much as one can absolutely point to and make fun of the fact that Triple H looked at Jade Cargill, Naomi, and Bianca Belair, and the best idea he had was, I don't know, you're all black, right? Like, you have the same problem with the Legado del Fantasma and LWO feud, which is, hey, you're all Latino, yeah?
Yeah.
Ish? Ish? Puerto Rican, some of you, maybe?
Yeah. There's like, definitely a... endemic issue, especially within WWE, of just oh, you're all the same race or from the same area of the world.
I mean, it's nothing new.
I know, but it seems like there's a lot more of it.
I think it is all the more jarring because we have
a culture that points that shit out now.
We have a culture that points that shit out now, but also that we'll talk about some decisions. We have kind of a more sane man behind the wheel. It is harder to justify Paul Levesque making those calls than a 70-year-old crazy man with poop in his pants.
Yeah.
Like that's just the difference here. But let's talk about Paul Levesque. This weekend seemed to be Paul Levesque special boy weekend.
Oh yeah. No, he inserted himself everywhere he could, put himself over anywhere he could.
Yeah. Paul Heyman put him over.
Yeah.
In his Hall of Fame speech, where Stephanie McMahon was there, the internet, of course, being the internet, noticed there was not a ring on that finger. but you know, there
was all resized.
That. The then now forever, and also like a this has been a presentation of the World Wrestling Entertainment, whatever voiceover, both now Paul.
It sounded like Vince to me.
It did sound like Vince in the beginning, but I know at least at the end, 100% it's Paul. Like it absolutely was him. But then they had like this bit at the end of the countdown show where it showed him like walking down the hall, and you have I forget which one of the random female talking heads it was, but she
I've never seen this lady before,
but she just goes, well, you know, Paul Levesque, he's making his way to Gorilla, you know, that means the show's about to start. What the fuck?
Yeah, that was odd. Not only that, why did he look so look like he was about to make an entrance for a match? Why did he look so pissed off?
Yeah,
like, brother, yeah, you're this is your first WrestleMania on your own, you're a big boy now, okay?
Yeah,
put on a professional face.
Yeah. After I don't know if you left the Peacock broadcast on, but after Mania ended, the first thing they showed was this trailer for a mini documentary that's going on YouTube on Wednesday, which is all about the pivot. And
the pivot that didn't exist.
The pivot that didn't exist.
This was the plan the whole time, people out there.
But you have like fucking Roman Reigns talking about, well, the thing is, if we just keep swerving them, we keep swerving them. And like Seth talking about, I've been part of a lot of messy builds.
Yeah.
I'm just going, what is happening?
Kayfabe is shattered. Like, it's not, they're not even trying anymore.
Yeah. I don't mind it. It is just so jarring.
It is. I enjoy the behind the scenes sort of stuff from the people who are there.
Yes.
you know, and I might watch that because I'm interested to see how they spin the spin is more the main concern for me.
Totally.
But yeah, that was very jarring. I did stick around. I listened to like the first two questions in the press conference to Rhea, and I'm like, these are all fucking terrible softball questions, and I'm not.
Yeah. Gonna, yeah. Well, the first
question. That's why, you know, I stuck around to the second one. And
I was gonna say, we can't shit on that first question.
No.
Especially while you're wearing a polar bear plunge hoodie.
Yeah. We can't shit on that question. I was just going to say, yeah, no. The second question was just another softball sort of thing. And I'm like, okay, this is how this is going. And I'm not going to stick around to watch this.
So
I went upstairs and put on True Lies and went to bed.
Fuck yeah. So the show kicks off. We've got a video package featuring Meek Mill. I thought it was a good opening video.
It was okay. I mean, he doesn't matter to me at all, but I understand.
Needle, but I thought it was well put together. I thought it was well produced.
Production team.
Then you had Triple Paul come out. to music.
Announced as Paul Triple H Levesque, by the way, which is weird and jarring.
Very much so. And he basically just says this is a new era. So we're already anointing ourselves a different era, which again has been a through point of the weekend, whether it's Cody doing press or Paul Heyman in his Hall of Fame speech and all of that. It's a new era. I believe Cody said it's the Renaissance era, which fuck off.
Get out of here, my guy.
But he just says, welcome to WrestleMania. And, you know, the show kicks off. And change number one, the national anthem was sung.
Yeah. I was wondering if that was the first time, because obviously I haven't been watching at all in a while. So yeah, it was a little weird. You know, it was always, I don't know, it was Vince's idea to be different from everybody else, to do America the Beautiful. And it kind of became, I guess what I'm getting at is, I don't know if that's one of the traditions that needed to be changed.
Well, I just thought it was a clear instance of this being different, as we had the song Vince hated. Like, that's why it was always America the Beautiful. He hates the national anthem.
Oh, that's the reason? He just didn't want it. He didn't do it just to be different?
Yeah, he hates the national anthem. They add that to the, you know, weird hating when people sneeze.
Eccentricities of the guy.
Eating exclusively steak and ketchup wraps. Whatever you want to just add to the list. There's another one. And the show kicked off with the women's world title match between Rhea Ripley and Becky Lynch. Becky getting a special book-themed intro, as her book just went on sale.
I get it, but this was not very good.
It was one of those instances where it went a beat too long.
A couple beats too long.
Like, if it had been, you know, the floating AR model of the book and that, like, little inscription at the front, and then they go to Becky's entrance, fine. But you're just, like, going 4, 5, 6, 7 quotes in, and it's just, this is a lot, guys.
Yeah.
Becky comes out. She's got special WrestleMania gear, also based around her book, which I thought was clever. And they start talking about how she's been fighting a 102 fever, which, hey, great time in the time of COVID to work a match.
Did anybody think to give her more cowbell?
You know what? That would be the way to solve the fever.
You gotta have it.
So she comes out, then the absolutely embarrassing looking group that does Rhea Ripley's entrance music appeared on screen, Motionless in White, I'm told they're called.
Yes, there's not a lot of white happening in the get up of those guys either, aside from their skin color.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say the ghostly pale makeup that the lead quote unquote singer was wearing.
Chris Motionless.
So they looked as bad as Rhea looked like one of the top stars in professional wrestling.
Yeah.
She comes out, she's got like this fucking barbarian level makeup and gear.
Top-notch.
And she just looks like, you know, the top gal.
Sure.
And sure as shit, they put her over Becky Lynch at WrestleMania. She's the girl.
The top female star.
Yeah, it's her.
Hands
down. She's been made. There's been some scuttlebutt. Apparently Becky's deal is almost up. She's talked about that her daughter is getting older and can't really do the bus life anymore, 'cause she'll have to start going to preschool and stuff like that, which that made me feel old because I remember that getting announced right at the beginning of the pandemic. But you know, maybe she is going to step away. I mean,
there was a shot late in the end of the match. Yeah. There was a shot of her sitting in the corner, propped up on a turnbuckle, and it kind of looked like she was kind of just soaking it in one last time.
Yeah.
And that might have just been her selling the loss in the ring, but it looked like there was a little more behind it.
Yeah, or you know, she might have been fucked up on DayQuil. I mean, let's be honest here.
Maybe she accidentally took NyQuil, which I've done before. Is not fun to fight through.
Yes. But then we had, after Rhea Ripley won, we had the first of these fun things. So if you were watching Peacock with ads, you got a block of ads as supplied by Peacock.
Mm-hmm.
If you had ad-free Peacock. You got a video of Pretty Deadly, who were not in the match, breaking down all six of the teams in the ladder match.
Okay.
So I guess this is the move so that they can put the commercials in that Peacock requires.
Right.
And Michael Cole even said it on commentary every time, which felt like a lot of words to get out while they're thrown into a video package. But it's like, you know, it, for those of us on Peacock Premium, you'll be seeing blah, blah, blah. That was a little weird. But that then did lead to the six-team ladder match for the tag team titles. They had the SmackDown and Raw belts separated on different different hooks with their own separate carabiners. So it was very clear, because they said the match would not end until both belts were taken down, that they were going to split the belts again.
Yeah.
And this was, minus some absolutely surreal spots, like there was an air raid crash by Tommaso Ciampa onto Tyler Bate from the top of a ladder right onto the mat, like not through a table. It was right onto the mat. This was probably one of the safer ladder matches in WrestleMania history, especially if we compare like to the lineage of Money in the Bank being a WrestleMania thing. This felt like guys were being safe, not as safe as they were being in the main event. Let me tell you.
Get there.
But all in all, it was fine. DIY is just a joke at this point.
Like a new level is pathetic. Sad a word? Like is. I feel like it was both pathetic and sad. It was one of the cringiest moments in the night of cringe, honestly.
Yeah.
They came out in fucking DX cosplay. The DIY theme had the DX sort of logo tinge to it. And I was like, what the fuck is actually happening? I really want to know whose idea this was. Was this Paul's idea, or was, I feel like it's Johnny Gargano's idea.
Yeah. Johnny's a big, Shawn Michaels mark. So this
he's not a big anything, but well, let's be honest. Fair.
but undoubtedly I feel like this had to be his idea. I will just say, Johnny, my dude, let us also learn a lesson from Adam Cole. That Adam Cole's was a lot more cringy. When you have gear that hints towards something you like, that's cool. Because someone watching him goes, oh, that's Wolverine themed, or that's Star-Lord themed, or whatever. That's cool. That's fun. When you just cosplay as a guy, unless it's a comedy match, you look like an asshole.
Yeah.
And that's where we were here. Ciampa too. Sorry, bud.
Yeah.
But the match was fine. We had the SmackDown tag titles went to Austin Theory and Grayson Waller. Who did next to nothing in the match.
Yeah, they really were not involved in much at all.
And the Raw tag titles went to the awesome Truth duo of R-Truth and The Miz. R-Truth, who had an incredible sequence of doing all the John Cena moves, his childhood hero.
Still popping. Truth, he's the one that will get a reaction from me in WWE.
Yeah. There's also a great bit where he put himself up on the apron. For a hot tag, and fucking Miz did the Morton roll into the tag. So guess what? I'm going to praise Miz for that sentence. That was good. otherwise, I don't know where Miz was half the time.
Sleeping on the outside.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, we also had, I forgot his gimmick name, Xavier Woods.
Yes.
Just kept trying to call him Consequences Creed coming out, in that old gear. Cause you know, in Philadelphia, there was the whole Rocky, a lot of Rocky mentions last night. Yeah. But that was Kofi fun to was see him
Rocky gear too.
Right. Yes. I did enjoy that. There was a wild spot with Tyler Bate doing his airplane twirl with Balor, who also had a ladder for this reason. And then I think it was Kofi who just ate that ladder straight to the dome.
I thought for sure Kofi had like a tooth knocked out or something on that.
Yeah.
And then looked rough.
And then Woods got like a chair kicked into his face. I wouldn't be surprised if he's missing a tooth or two this morning.
Yeah, definitely a shiner. JD McDonagh showed up as a run-in just to go through two tables, and he only went through about one and a half of them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There was the what's his name? Little guy we just talked about. Johnny Gargano hit tornado DDT outside of the ring through a table on the floor, which is a fun spot.
Yeah, that looked nutty. I think it was I just realized I said he didn't really do anything. I think it was Grayson Waller was the one who went through the ladder on the outside.
Oh, yeah. But wasn't that after they won or was that
before? It was before they won. It was very well executed. I will give them credit on that.
Yeah.
It was probably the cleanest ladder bump I've ever seen.
Kofi doing a fucking truss fall from a ladder inside the ring to the people outside of the ring was crazy. Insane.
That was crazy. But, you know, it was what you would expect. There were the car crash moments and while Theory and Waller getting the tag belts is a gigantic shrug for me. The fact that Miz and R-Truth have been consistently one of the most entertaining things on the Raw side.
I mean Gold Watch run.
Yeah, that's what this is. And also it gives Truth a reason to continue his stuff with Judgment Day, which has been comedy gold.
So here's a question.
Yes.
Are they a BDSM club in like storyline wise? Because I know, you know, that the fucking gimmick with priests and the mask, and there's always some kinds of leather and chain sort of thing happening.
And he always has a colored hanky in his back pocket, just saying.
Yeah. I mean, and Finn Balor looked like he was part of the Dark Order or something. He's wearing some weird purple gimp mask. I don't know. Yeah. I was just like, if that's your kink, then hey, kink away. I'm not kink shaming over here. It's just it was a little like, you know, are they trying out for a Mushroom Head tribute band or something? Like, what's going on here? I mean,
between that and, you know, they always talk about with Rhea and Dom that mommy's always on top. Like, there's a definite polycule vibe going on there. And it's the worst polycule. But yeah. So we then had the battle of all the luchadors, as it was Rey Mysterio and Andrade who filled in for Dragon Lee as of Friday.
And
like they switched that over almost immediately.
Was Dragon Lee not in this match?
Injured is what they said. Okay. I think they showed in the video recap for this, which again, you probably didn't see if you had ads filled. Peacock. I think he got beat down backstage or something like that. I feel like the way they shot it is it's going to turn out it was Carlito who did it, because Carlito is basically wearing a gigantic shirt that says, I'm going to turn on these guys. A lot of those shirts going around in wrestling today.
Yeah.
But yeah, Rey Mysterio and Andrade against Santos Escobar and Dominic Mysterio. We run back Rey versus Dominic once again. Dominic's entrance had probably the worst of the terrible AR graphics of the night, as it was a kind of a racist caricature.
Kind of his kind there. You know, it was pretty pretty spot on stereotyping right there. 3D
homie is what that was.
Yeah.
This match was fine. Nothing really exciting except for Joaquin Wilde doing a slingshot plancha to the floor.
Yeah, he got some good distance on that.
Probably got shot out a good 15 feet. It was pretty nuts.
Zelina Vega almost killed herself on a second rope moonsault. And then Electra Nachos didn't catch her. So that was a tough landing for Zelina.
And toward the end of the match, as Dom grabs a steel chair, some large white dudes in Eagles-themed Rey Mysterio masks pop up. And again, the optics of this is your match featuring Hispanic superstars, and the only people who were able to cause the victory were large white guys.
Brought to you by Agua Fresca.
Yes. Turns out it was Jason Kelsey and Lane Johnson of the Eagles to get the hometown pop and to probably have someone in WWE go, do you think we can get Taylor? Do you think we can get Taylor? Taylor?
Yeah, yeah.
Can we get her?
Paul's like, my daughters really love Taylor. Can we get her here?
Meanwhile, Jeff Jarrett's over talking to Tony Khan. It's like, hey, look, she's friends with my kids.
Yeah, right.
She's in Wembley the night before us.
Yeah.
You need me to get on the horn? We can make some things happen. That would be an inflection point if they can make that happen, by the way.
And if Jeff Jarrett's the one who does it, it's even funnier.
But it was really just to have Jason Kelsey show up and take off a luchador mask because, of course, he got mainstream pub because the night of the Super Bowl, he was super drunk and seen partying wearing a Rey Mysterio mask that he, quote, found on the floor.
Yeah, that tracks. That guy definitely looks like he would wear something he finds on the floor.
Yeah, yeah.
Look, he's having the time of his life. I have no reason to shit on him. It's just, it was a very thirsty moment from a company that is constantly thirsty for some degree of mainstream attention.
Yeah, no, that's true.
We then had, again, if you had Peacock Premium, you actually got a really, really good video package for the Uso v. Uso match. Unfortunately for that video package, the match happened.
Well, I got a video package.
Oh, you did see that? Okay.
Yeah, the one of them standing back to back with like their real shoot names and stuff like that. I figured
all of them got bumped.
No, this one was on the show that I got, and I have the cheap version. My issue is, like, you know, this is a blood feud with two brothers who hate each other. It's like, we have to film this thing where we're back to back in the same room together, and there's no, you know, sort of physical altercation that happens for this blood feud, literal blood feud. I was like, okay, sure.
Jey Uso was brought to the ring by Lil Wayne, who
holy I'm pretty fucking sure shit.
Did not know where he was.
Okay. And obviously, if you were following on Twitter, I had many tweets about my just absolute hatred of the job that Samantha Erdvine does. I'm sure she's a fine person, but I think she's awful at her job.
Yeah.
But I don't know if this was part of the contract of him appearing. I don't know if this is her editorializing the greatest rapper of all time, Lil Wayne. You can fuck right off with that shit, lady. Okay. Yeah.
It was reiterated by the commentary team. So I think that was the line.
Shit.
Yeah.
If that was the stipulation of him appearing, I'd be like, now we'll pass.
But then, you know, so Jey comes in with all that, then Jimmy John Uso, comes out, Jey dives on him during his entrance, and we're off to the races, is what I would say if there was anything resembling a level of speed or interest to get the crowd involved in what was probably the worst WrestleMania match of the modern era. This,
wow, yeah, I'm trying to think of anything off the top of my head that was that bad.
It wasn't even that they tried things and failed. Like, there
they didn't try.
That's the problem.
It was like a wrestling match, a normal Monday Night Raw wrestling match.
It was barely even that. Like, nothing built. You know, the WWE style is very, very homogenized. Guys brawl back and forth. Everyone has their 3 to 5 signature spots that they have to get in the match. The heel takes over until the face gets his big moment. And either A, the face hits his finisher or wins, or B, the heel figures out some sort of chicanery to win.
Right.
It's the same style no matter the match, which is fine. It's worked for decades for them. But they didn't even have, like, heat or build.
No. They traded just some super kicks.
Yeah. That was, oh, and there was a little bit of dialogue. The Roman Reigns school of acting brought to us once again by the Usos.
Yeah, allegedly cinema. So Mark pointed this out to me this morning as he's watching. They're both in Bloodline, or were in Bloodline. How is this not a Bloodline sort of situation between those two?
Bloodline rules match, you mean?
Yeah.
Great question.
Solo? Where was, you know, I mean, I know why Roman didn't come out with them here.
Yeah, but yeah. Do you think Roman's going to work twice? Come on.
Hell no, brother.
They're lucky they're getting them twice this weekend. Yeah, that's a great question. And I think the addition of Plunder might have helped. But if anything else, because I criticize him so often, I would like to say, Jeff Hardy, Matt Hardy, you no longer have the worst brother versus brother match in wrestling history. Congratulations.
I mean, nobody's ever going to top Owen versus Brett from 10. So let's just be honest.
Well,
are we even talking here?
But yeah.
I'm surprised they didn't have D-Von versus fucking Bubba in this one too, in fucking Philly. Alex Jones looking motherfucker.
He was at the Hall of Fame, and they cut to him a lot during Heyman's speech. Heyman's speech, by the way, is the lone thing I watched from the Hall of Fame.
Yes.
Yeah. I wanted to see what he would say.
He said, suck my fucking dick. So
he did. I'll go on record here. I'm still a Paul Heyman mark. Like, okay. I love hearing that dude, like, shoot off during a promo. It's very entertaining to me. Match sucked. So much so that, again, listening to Observer Radio this morning, Brian Alvarez was transitioning. He said, we had Jimmy Uso versus Jey Uso, and Dave Meltzer, who always steamrolls, just goes, that match sucked. which is not his normal MO.
No, but it's not inaccurate either.
Yeah, it was bad. I
tweeted this too. I'm just rehashing most of my tweets from last night. I don't care. The crowd did not give a fuck about this match either.
No,
they were fucking silent, and it just goes to show, like, whichever Jimmy John or Jersey Mike Uso it is that does the yeet thing.
Yeah,
that's all that's over with that guy is the fucking yeets. Like, as a wrestler, crickets, absolutely fucking nothing.
And I was just a little disappointed because the thing I've said about the Usos before on this podcast, and before that, I would say it to people I know when we talk about, you know, like an Usos match. The Usos as a tag team have always been the master of, I don't care about their match. I'm not interested in their match. When I find out someone's having a match against the Usos, I get actively disappointed. The match happens. It's really fucking good. And then I completely forget about it, and we end up in the same spot. So as Jimmy was coming out last night, I was sitting there going, you know what? Maybe they're going to surprise me. I give them the benefit of the doubt for once.
Well, I don't know why you did that.
And
poor choice.
Yeah, they lost that opportunity with me.
As a tag team, they were very good at doing their style of match.
Yes. Yes.
And nothing outside of that.
Right. So then we had the 6-woman tag team match. Again, ads on Peacock. I'm sorry that you didn't get to see the video package, because it had Bianca doing a promo in what may have been the exact same setup they used for Superstars in 1991, because it was the most obnoxious and terrible green screen for her to do a promo in front of. I really, really wanted just to have the big Bianca Belair graphic behind her, just to totally cement that this is Superstars.
Standard
video package put it over. Just there was that bit, and I thought it was interesting. But it was Bianca Belair, Naomi, and Jade Cargill against the Damage Control trio of Dakota Kai, Asuka, and Kairi Sane.
By God, Dakota Kai. Sweet. Gee, I hadn't seen her in a while, and man, I have been missing out, apparently.
Yes. I'm an OG Dakota crush over here.
Yeah.
Dark Dakota is best. Dark Coda.
Dark Dakota.
Dark Dakota. Yeah. Anyway, very attractive.
Oh, my God. There was a photo of her and mommy together last night, and I just needed to replenish fluids afterwards.
Asuka, clearly in her gives no fucks era of her career, her jamming out to Bianca Belair's entrance music was a 10.
Yeah, I missed that.
Kairi's gear was incredible. She looked awesome.
Like, she did.
Much like Rhea Ripley at the top of the show, it was like, okay, you're going full on with your hair and makeup and everything, and you're looking like a goddamn star.
Tits out.
Yeah.
Watch for the show.
I will say this. Jade looked like a star.
Well, sure. I mean, she just has aura.
Her whole gear was kind of weird. Like, she had these like white lines painted on her. I don't know what that was about, unless she's a really big fan of Grandmaster Flash and Millie Mel. Like, I don't know why you would have them.
Wow, that's a fucking deep cut. Okay.
You're welcome. I could have said Duran Duran if I wanted to go a little more modern, because they covered it later.
Hungry for the Wingstop.
But this was a match.
Yeah, it was, it seemed short.
Yes. I heard it was like 8 minutes long.
And, I'm trying to figure out was there anything with the non-Asian ladies? Was there anything it's supposed to be together? Was Jade supposed to be Storm? Was Bianca supposed to be Cyclops? And
Trinity
was Raiden from Mortal Kombat?
Whole Raiden Kung Lao thing going on.
Yeah, there you go.
Very weird. I don't think it was intentional. I think just Bianca had fun sunglasses and it made it lean to look like that. And of course, Jade has looked like Storm since she debuted.
Sure.
I mean, that as the A Storm Is Coming tagline. But yeah, it was built to Jade getting the hot tag, although she got the hot tag and took her fucking time getting in the ring. So I hope that was agent note number one after the match. But yeah, she hit her moves and looked cool, and the crowd popped when she won.
Yeah, I mean, she didn't do anything new. I don't know what she's been doing in the PC for however long she's been there, but hey, you know what? Good for her.
I will say she was another talent who was talking about AEW in the press this week. I thought it was interesting that her line was, look, I'm 31. I need to be somewhere where I can make a lot of money fast. And you know what? Cool. I get it. We then had the build for the Sami Zayn Gunther match. The video package was really awesome. Gunther cutting a really cool promo over it. And it was during this, I think there was even a shot of him wearing like a cut off flannel shirt that I'm going, holy fuck, Sami Zayn's turning into Mick Foley.
Mm.
And it was only further underlined by the match which occurred.
Yeah.
So they do a whole thing where they follow Sami Zayn after getting a pep talk from Chad Gable, who had been training him. And honestly, Chad Gable probably should have been in this match, but neither here nor there. Chad Gable gives him a rah-rah speech. So we then see Sammy from behind walk, you know, the whole walkway backstage to get to the entrance.
He had a bit with his wife and kid too.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, had a bit with the wife and kid. And he also popped in with Kevin Owens, which I love those guys. You know, there's a handful of things in WWE I will just unabashedly appreciate. And there are two of them. And, you know, he has big entrance, crowd was behind him. Gunther comes out. I don't know how long he's had this theme. The current theme he has, nowhere near as good as just using the original classical piece.
Yeah.
That was the intro.
Yeah.
But it loses all effect. That's true of most modern WWE themes. They're just garbage.
Yeah.
But this match, as I would hope for, absolutely ruled.
This is match of the night, hands down.
I mean, by leaps and bounds.
Yeah.
Weirdly enough, because a lot of times, and actually for the last few years, it's been, okay, the Gunther WrestleMania match ends up being in my match of the year list.
I mean, the guy's good.
The guy's very, very good. I don't feel like this got into that gear of holy fucking shit. Because I think they built a little too much on the drama. Again, with the Mick Foley, had Sammy's wife in the Colette role of being, you know, the supportive wife who's yelling and talking shit to the guy beating the piss out of her husband and all that. And then you had Big Finish, which was for the first time in his WWE career. Sami Zayn busted out the old El Generico top rope brain buster.
Yeah, he fucking did.
Not the cleanest one he's ever done.
No, fucking wasn't.
The rust showed on it. But then
Gunther's a big guy too. Yeah. So
not as big as he used to be.
Well, I know, but like tall, like he's, you know,
he's a lot of man. But he eats it, bounces into the opposite corner. Haluva kick gets us a 1-2-3. And we have a new Intercontinental Champion. A moment that would have been stronger had they not undercut it with, well, you know, this is his fourth time being champion, but this is probably one of the sweeter ones. It's like, hell, guys. You don't have to point out that fact.
Hey, man, somebody has to finish a story around here.
Yeah, true. we then had the attendance announcement. Video packages and more. And we had ourselves first just about 15 minutes, if not 20, of entrances.
Sure did. Four guys, four big entrances.
Cody comes out. He's got Coda Vader. I don't know if they re-recorded his theme, but it's the downstate theme sounded a little different last night.
Okay.
But, you know, he does the long walk around the ring. He takes his weight belt. He gives it to Brandi Rhodes' dad,
who is
by ringside, apparently recently beat cancer. So, you know, kudos to him. We had Seth come out. He's wearing a fucking Cher Oscar gown as his entrance gear. Okay.
He took forever. Choice.
Then we had probably one of the bigger productions of the night.
Oh, you don't say.
They zoom out and there's this whole video package that starts playing. It starts with, you know, the Brahma Bull on it. And then there are these video games graphics. And I'm going, holy fuck, did The Rock finally watch Scott Pilgrim? Like, that's all I can think of. But you
the
know,
sound effects were akin to it for sure.
It had a voiceover of Dwayne going, "Final boss ready," and all of that, which was a little cheese ball. And then music hits. Out comes The Rock. He's wearing his tearaway pants. He's wearing a vest. He's got the random people champions belt that he was gifted by Muhammad Ali's a widow the night before at the Hall of Fame.
It's pretty cringy.
Yeah. Hey, look, that team needed two belts. And he makes his way. Like, Dwayne looked physically probably the best he has in some time. He was
The fire bowl.
Oh yes, that's true. There was the fire bowl. Physically he was not the meat chunk he was back at Mania 29 against John Cena. Like, I just remember him looking like a T-bone steak, like his torso, just thick and meaty.
I feel like his upper body is definitely lost. Like, not just like in the guttle region, but like, yeah, the upper body, he used to be a lot wider.
He can get his arms down to his side now, no problem. and don't get me wrong, I would love to look, I think it'd be awkward if I looked like that when in my 50s, but I would love to be in that level of shape. Let's just put it that way.
Sure. I just don't want to do that diet, so I will never look like that.
So then we've got Seth, Cody in ring. We got Rock in ring. We got Roman coming out to his entrance. His entrance was shorter than Dwayne's, which was genuinely surprising.
No, it's not. it's Dwayne.
Then we had all four in the ring. Samantha Irving, your favorite ring announcer. She got to the point in this where I'm pretty sure she was singing certain words.
Yeah, it was just abysmally terrible.
Yeah, it was a lot. Because she also had to hit like every nickname, and it was a lot.
At this point, I'd rather have Justin Roberts.
which says a lot. Hey, I'm just saying, Dasha's on the market now. Let's make that happen. And then they proceeded to have a 40-minute fucking tag match.
Yeah, they sure did, which was boring for 30 minutes of it.
Yeah, I don't know how to underline this more. 25 minutes is a perfectly fine amount of time for a big time main event. You don't need to go 40 minutes, especially when it is the Attitude Era special, the old walk and brawl, where it's just like, all right, we're going to bail out and Rock's going to yell at the refs to make it okay for them to, you know, go relaxed rules and everything and get a very audible F-bomb from Dwayne.
Yeah, whoever's on dump button is probably out of a job today.
Yeah, because he then dumped out whatever Michael Cole was saying instead. And it was fine. Like, I can't sit there and point out anything that I thought was actively bad about the in-ring work. Like, Dwayne looked good.
Yeah, he hung in there for a guy who hasn't had a match in 10 years.
Yeah. They all were clearly working as if they were wrapped in bubble wrap.
Yeah.
Because they did not want to fuck over the main event of WrestleMania the next night.
Yeah, some of those punches and kicks.
Especially in the beginning, like fucking Seth doing a double axe off the barrier was like, what are you doing? You've never done a double axe handle in your entire career.
Yeah. Plus it's barely high up. He's like 4 feet off the ground.
Yeah. Like Dwayne's head was at his pec. Like, it was not a big leap. We got both announcers tables, Spanish and English, broken again, Attitude Era special. Mm-hmm. And sure as shit, clean as a sheet, Dwayne pins Cody.
Yeah. I mean, was there really any other way this could go?
I honestly thought, considering the big, it wasn't the go home angle, but the big angle was The Rock leaving Cody in his blood, in a pool of his own blood, that Cody would get the pin on Dwayne.
Now, Dwayne ain't coming back and eating a pin. Final boss. I mean, that's the thing, you know, you don't beat the game. But Roman sure as fuck wasn't getting pinned. So,
But now the odds are stacked against Cody Rhodes, as it will be Bloodline rules this evening.
So who comes out to help Cody?
Do you want me to give you what my legit answer is?
Or do you, I mean,
do you, okay. So storyline wise, yeah, probably Seth or Jay or, you know, someone like that. Legitimately.
You think it's going to be Austin?
I think it's going to be Austin. I think it's going to be Cena. And I think it's going to be The Undertaker.
Oh,
because all three were said to be getting involved physically on the show.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
And it's like, I could hear I could picture someone saying the only way to take out Roman, the only way to finish the bloodline is to have this multi-generational thing. And plus it gives Cody the nod as he's the next guy.
God, I hate because that so much.
That's your eras. You have Superstars era with Taker. You have Attitude era with Austin. You have
Ruthless Aggression
with Cena. And now you have this new era and it's Cody. And it's like, okay, the nod's given.
That's kind of pathetic, though.
It is. But remember who's booking now.
It's just, I hate all of, as a whole, this over-dramatic, overbooked style. It's, yeah. And I complain about this when it happens in AEW, too. The whole MJF and Adam Cole thing was fucking a chore to get through because it was so heavy on the melodrama. And I'm like, it's because most of the people aren't good enough actors to pull it off for the most part. And it's like, you're supposed to dip a toe into it. Into that in your pro wrestling, not die fucking head first and have it be fucking everything.
Yeah.
Like aside from the ladder match, because that's, like you said, a car crash.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of any impressive wrestling moves that I saw throughout the entire night one of WrestleMania last night.
Even Sami Gunther, for as good as it was,
Brainbuster, sure.
Yeah, the Brainbuster is probably it. But it was, you know, chops.
A lot of chops and kicks and power bombs. Like, Sammy was eating the fuck out of those power bombs for sure.
Yeah.
And there was a rock bottom through the tape. Like, but that's not a wrestling. I mean, it's a wrestling move, but it's a fucking hardcore, you know, sort of thing. Like, in terms of the in-ring action, there, of the entire 4.5 hours of the show, maybe a handful of moves, if I'm looking back at it, like, oh, wow, that was really cool. The house style is just so bland and fucking omnipresent. There's no differentiation.
Could not agree more. Like that
is organized. That's the word.
Yes. That is the takeaway I had because, you know, I will sit down, God, almost monthly at this point and watch a 5-hour AEW pay-per-view. And will all of it be good? No. But it's different.
Yeah.
The match you see between, you know, the Lucha Bros and Young Bucks is not the match you see between
Eddie Kingston and whoever.
Like, yeah. There's a difference.
Yeah.
And this show just kind of underlined how much, and maybe it's because I have been so far removed from this. Like, as we've discussed before, I try to read results, and if there's anything where people are like, oh, that was a great match, I'll go ahead and watch it.
Yeah. You're better than me.
I am so far removed now from the day in, day out WWE product that it just underlined to me how much this is like the McDonald's assembly line of wrestling. It is. Look, McDonald's has a time and a place.
Yeah.
WWE has a time and a place. And I was honestly going into last night's show, I wouldn't say with optimism, but it certainly wasn't pessimism. I was hoping to see
curiosity. Okay,
yeah. This was their opportunity to show up and show out. Mania is less so than the Rumble or SummerSlam, but Mania usually is a good time. There have been some terrible fucking Manias over the years.
Sure. I've been to one.
True. But I was really going into this going like, all right, you know what? Paul's got the wheel now. He certainly put together some amazing shows when he was running NXT. He's got probably the best locker room, one of the best locker rooms they've had. This should have been good. And the fact that really all I can walk away from this show saying is Sami Gunther was good. and Rhea and Kairi looked fucking cool. That's kind of an indictment of the current product. Maybe tonight will be different because I will watch tonight.
I might. I don't know.
Maybe tonight will be different. Maybe we will, you know, have an epic main event between Cody and Roman, which probably is going to go fucking 40 minutes again. Jesus God in heaven.
No, it will. It will. And I don't know. It's just. It's just not for me. It's just.
Yeah.
I am not the target demographic for WWE right now. And you know what? Fine. You know,
yeah.
This is why I don't watch it. You know, there are other reasons why I decided a while ago to stop giving them my money. And I've still not given them their money. Or my money. So, you know, people who enjoy it, go ahead, enjoy it. I'm going to continue to motherfuck it because I don't like it.
Yeah. Well, Chris, I did want to take a moment, though, before we wrap up here to shout out our new sponsor, the WWE Experience in Saudi Arabia.
Excuse me. I have to go suck a blood money covered dick.
The Roughhouse Podcast is a weekly podcast fueled by coffee, pizza rolls, and the stench of dirty litter boxes. Follow Christoph and Marty on Twitter at RoughhouseSGW, at Facebook.com/TheRoughhousePodcast, and at Patreon.com/TheRoughhousePodcast for early access to episodes, exclusive podcasts, Roughhouse redos, and Roughhouse Divided movie trivia games. New episodes drop every single Monday on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, and wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Subscribe, motherfuckers!
This is the Roughhouse podcast with Justin and Christoph.
That's it.
Fuck Christoph. He's terrible with his information. Okay. Hey, this is The Rock. Shut your mouth, jabronis, and listen up, because this is the Roughhouse podcast with
Marty
and my least favorite man on the planet, Christoph.